Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I am joined today by miraculous Max Montana.
Thank you.
You're a miracle. You know, you're such a special guy.
Modern miracle.
Yes. Miracle of modern medicine?
Yeah. That's what I was getting at.
As always, thank you for joining us here on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you may be listening from. This episode is a special one. We're right about celebrating 8 years of Juggernaut Train Systems, the 8-year anniversary. So we're going to be talking about 8 important lessons that, Max hasn't been here for 8 years, but I have. But 8 lessons from the last 8 years. Don't hold us to real strict dates on here, because they're more just eight important business training life lessons that we've learned in this time. Today's episode is brought to you by Hot Pockets and Hack Squats. It's a lifestyle, and that came to us from Mr. Murray Lifestyle on YouTube. You think
Mr. Murray Lifestyle? Is that
all he does is make lifestyle brands up?
I was going to think maybe he is a lifestyle.
Well,
the Mr. Murray Lifestyle. I mean, I'm kind of curious what that is.
Everyone, it's apparently Hot Pockets and Hack Squats.
he's very overweight, except his legs are jacked. Huge quads.
You think he eats them at the same time?
He's got one in each hand while he's holding the hack squat, and he can just go rep for rep with Hot Pockets.
That was a pretty, if you saw on our Instagram, Jacob Hies.
Well, yeah, that was really good, huh?
140 kilos, so he cleans 140, and Jacob is a 77 kilo
140 guy. Is a pretty big clean and jerk for him.
Yeah.
I mean, the best, like 155, 150 yeah. maybe.
So he cleans 140, he stands it up. His buddy hands him a bowl of crunch berries.
Oh, crunch berries, yeah.
He takes a couple bites of the crunch berries, like with his hands out supporting the bar on his shoulders. But he takes the bowl back, resets his hands.
Yeah. Sticks it.
Jerks it. I mean, if his best is 155, 140 is...
90%.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's not easy.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah.
And if you're going to do stupid tricks for Instagram, you better make them pretty fucking good.
They got to be extra good, yeah. You can't just do some bullshit.
So let's just get right into it. Hopefully a lot of good information to be shared and some good insights. So our first lesson from the last 8 years, and this is going to be particularly applicable to anyone wanting to work in the fitness business, whether that's being a coach, owning a gym, whatever it may be, is that the fitness business is just as much business as it is fitness, if not even more business than it is fitness. I remember being a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, much more youthful, exuberant-looking young man than I am now. In the summer of 2009, June, July 2009, when I was writing what I thought at the time was a business plan for a place called Juggernaut Training Systems. Yeah. And, just thinking this is going to be great. I'm going to coach and I'm going to lift, and it's, everyone's just going to come and lift, and then there'll be some money that shows up.
The everyone's just going to come and lift and money shows up. It's a trap that I think every one of us has fallen into.
Yeah. And then you go on to actually do business, and I'm sure that this is going to be true for anyone, who's an entrepreneur and works in the field that they're passionate about, art, fitness, whatever it may be, they think that it's all the fun part, and there's a lot of the not fun part. There's a lot of, taxes and cold calling and marketing and all that kind of stuff, and all the bills that come along with things. Plus, there's when you get into the physical location, it's the wall painting and toilet cleaning and all that kind of stuff.
All the little shit. It's also all the like constants, like just mistakes and failures. Mm-hmm. And that was a waste of money there. That was a waste of money there. Like those things are huge. You know, you don't realize it when you're doing it, because it all seems like, I mean, I feel like the anxiety of like, oh, you got to keep going because you're the one that is responsible for the amount of foods put on your table. You do yeah. keep, there is no downtime where you're like, oh, I'm off work at 5 and just go home and you're done. I mean, it's just 24 hours a day. So there's like a lot of that feeling like, oh, like this is a good idea. This is going to work out this way in many different aspects, big and small, where it just doesn't go. Things don't just go the way you want them to go. They go the way they go, and you have to figure out whether that's going to be beneficial or not, right? I think that's tough.
Yeah, and both of us have, I guess, unique education backgrounds for this, you know, profession.
Yeah.
That my degree is in history. Max's is in hard knocks, school of hard knocks. But, yeah, if we had the Strength in Academia podcast a couple weeks ago with Dr. Mike and Mankini, you know, talking about the best way to pursue coaching education through the university system. And that's great. Do that. That's an important, you know, it's still the most important part of working in as a coach. You got to be able to coach.
Yeah.
You have to be able to do that. If you know how to market and stuff, that's great as well. You could probably find someone to handle that part of things for you, but it would be worthwhile along the way as you take your anatomy, physiology, you know, exercise, sport physiology classes and do great internships and stuff. Throw in a business class along the way. Throw in a marketing class along the way. You know, understand a bit about taxes and profit and losses statements and all that kind of shit.
If I could give advice to somebody who started, I would say everybody's the best coach in the world, because they're all going to say that. You can't just sell the best coaching or the best this and that, right? Everybody's all got that. But get, like the chat saying, like, I would have taken business class. I would have learned how to do taxes right off the bat. I would have learned how to do accounting. I would have spent way more time learning how to do, like writing, video editing, all those things initially, because that's 99% of what goes on, right?
Yeah, and if it's not you doing it yourself, if you're going into business with people, you know, two points to that effect. Even if they're your best friends, make an operating agreement.
Yeah.
Figure out what can happen in the worst case scenario. Yeah. Have that awkward discussion up front rather than having an incredibly awkward, shitty discussion down the road about it. It's a much better way to do things. And also be strategic about partnerships that you're creating.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a powerlifter and your friend's a powerlifter and your other friend's a powerlifter and well, guess what?
You can
only have a powerlifting business at that point. It's probably not going to be great if it's just training. That's all we know about. But if you have one person who's the coach and one person who's the marketer and one person who's the back end business accounting type of stuff, then you have a great relationship where people can kind of support each other and fill in the gaps that other people have in their knowledge. So like that is point number one, that the fitness business is just as much business as it is fitness. Number two, much more of a training idea. Eight years ago, I had just finished. So summer of 2009, I had just finished my senior year in college. I had won two NAIA national championships in the shot put, throwing at just about 64 feet, 19.46 meters. I was looking at, you know, what to do with my training going forward, and I trained in a much different way than I do now. I trained, you know, West Side style, conjugate style of training, you know, bands, chains, special bars, all that stuff, box jumps, and I was incredibly powerful. I was incredibly explosive. My senior year of college, weighed 290 pounds, had a 35.5-inch vertical, ran in the 4.6s on the 40 on a laser timing, you know, broad jumped about 10 feet, 6 inches. That made me very, very powerful. The sport I played was not the sport of how much weight can you lift, how high can you jump, how fast can you run. It was how far can you throw this ball. And the real eye-opening, two real eye-opening moments to me were as I was there, 22, 23 years old, you know, benching 500, a ballistic style 500-pound bench with this 36-inch vertical to go with it. I could stand throw about 58, 59 feet at that point. And I remember seeing a chart about Reese Hoffa, one of the great, phenomenal shot putter, and made by his coach Don Babbitt at the University of Georgia, and it tracked all of Reese's testing results, like on his lifts and his jumps and general throws, and then his throwing results, stand throw, different weights, and full throws. And it went from when he was 18 to when he was 26. And at, I believe at 26 years old, he threw something like 22.43 meters, like 74 feet, just about. And I remember looking at that and looking at the result in everything, this whole big chart. And I was like, well, I can jump higher. I can jump farther. I can run faster. I can overhead backwards farther. I can stand throw farther and bench more, squat more, clean more, everything more. Except the one thing that mattered. I couldn't throw the shot put as far, you know, when we do the whole thing and spin around in the circle. And so that, and then coming out of college, I had a contemporary, a guy I had never heard of at the time, by the name of Justin Rohde, and he went to Mount Union. And that, this, in 2009, I believe Justin Rohde threw like 1780. Let's say 58 feet. And even that one I know was a pretty big PR for him. He was more like a 56-foot shot putter. I'm throwing 64 feet. And that's in 2009. And then in 2012, I'm running Juggernaut, which I love and is great, and I couldn't imagine doing anything else. But I stopped throwing the shot put in 2010 because I was still throwing, you know, 64, and I was also working 60 to 70 hours a week. But then fast forward to 2012... and 56-foot Justin Rohde has now thrown 69 feet and is going to the Olympics for Canada. And I'm like, what the hell happened here? And Justin Rohde had moved to Kamloops in British Columbia and trained with Anatoly Bondarchuk, Dr. Bondarchuk, you know, the father, the godfather of these special strength ideas and throwing overweight shots and really high-frequency specific training with very de-emphasized general qualities, where I was incredibly, you know, gifted and had really high results in the general exercises, lifting, jumping, general throws. I mean, the stand throw would be more specific, but Justin Rohde had everything that I didn't have, pretty much. He was benching 405, 425, and throwing 69 feet, and Well, I just didn't have that half of things. And that really made it click for me because I'd heard about Dr. Bondarchuk and James Smith had talked to me about him. And I was just like, you know, I can't do that stuff. Like, I'm going to lose my edge, my big jumping and big power. But looking back, you know, the way I trained, though it made me very successful up to a point, I would change so many things about it looking back because, let's say, in 2012, I would have been 26 years old. That sounds right. Yeah. 26 years old. And, you know, and I stopped throwing when I was 23, or let's say when I was really throwing my best, I think when I was 22, and I wasn't working so much with the Juggernaut stuff. You know, with four extra years of development at that point, I could have still gotten as strong and jumped as high. But by doing it with this understanding specificity and what really related to my sporting result, I could have, you know, going back to high school, put so much more emphasis to throwing, to technique, to special strength exercises, and brought along the strength, the general strength qualities and explosive qualities a little bit slower. And, you know, at 26, 27, 28, probably would have ended up still benching, you know, 500, squatting 700 with these big jumps, but now would have had a ton of great technique and a ton of throws under my belt when I got there instead of, you know, the special strength qualities, which I just lacked and I think become harder and harder to develop as you get older and older.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think for Max, the specificity is almost the other side.
Yeah, the opposite side of that.
Yeah.
I mean, when I started lifting, there was zero, I mean, essentially zero effort devoted to the general qualities. No general training done. Very, very, very narrow band of choices for exercise selection. I mean, 5-6 exercises.
Total.
Total. Yeah. Complete, in the complete arsenal. 6 exercises. no variety, no variation in loading, no real overload, no progressive overload because nothing ever changed in intensity. Volumes never changed, but everything was identical to the sport form. So maximum snatch and clean and jerk, really, really high frequency, but no real structure, no general stuff. You know, nothing was devoted to building any kind of foundation, and ultimately that led to me being a completely one-dimensional lifter that had, you know, I excelled in the areas I was physically capable of excelling, the squatting, but the rest of it, the snatch clean jerk, the results just did not justify the means, or the means didn't justify the result didn't justify the means. So, you know, that was like, if I went back to it, looking at it from Chad's perspective, I would have done way more the opposite. I would have spent those first 6-8 years developing basic skills, the athletic stuff, all the general training, way more general training. I would still have done some specific stuff in skill practice because the technique aspect, you know, even went down the tubes because the training was just too much. But I would have spent way more time on general stuff and the actual just follow the actual progression and structure of a pretty sound training model. I would have achieved way bigger results, you know, and by the end, I probably would have been just as strong anywhere had I done that, you know, like you were saying, where you probably end at the same point, but with a better result in the sport you're actually competing in. So
yeah, so I think the big takeaway there, specificity is the most important thing. It's the most important thing to understand about training, but it's not the only thing.
Yeah.
So it's all important, but it all has its place. So understand what your goal is, what your athlete's goals are, and let specificity create the framework in which your decisions are made. But don't think, you know, that they said specificity is the most important. That's all I'm doing. Yeah. Because then you get
this.
Yeah. And
pretty to look at, but didn't do a lot.
Lesson number 3 is to care about what the right people think.
Yeah.
You know, you hear, like, people say, well, you know, I don't care about what anyone thinks, or, like, don't care about what anyone thinks, just do you. And it's like, no, that's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who it's not worth caring about what they think.
Yeah.
But there is also a lot of people it is worth caring about what they think. And so creating, you know, a group of people to surround yourself with, as cliche as it may sound, you know, that you're what, the sum of the 5 people you spend the most time with, something like that. That's a saying, I think.
There it is. The sum of the 5 people you spend the most time with becomes you.
Yeah. Being very selective about those people and having, you know, whether it's a mentor type of relationship or just people that you trust around you and that you respect around you. Mm. To give you honest feedback, criticisms, to tell you when you're fucking up, to tell you when you're doing something great. You need to have those people in your life. You can't be listening to what everyone says because then it's just too much noise.
Yeah.
But, you know, to think that you're just going to do whatever you want and not consider the opinions of anyone else would be foolish. It is definitely worth listening to the opinions of others. Just make sure you're being very strategic and selective about who those people are.
Yeah, you have to surround yourself with people that can give you criticism that's constructive. And that's easy to find yes men and just people that will agree with everything you say or you know, they just think alike and they don't want to be critical in their thinking or their sort of assessments of your stuff or what you need. You surround yourself with people that actually can give you good critical feedback that you can do something with. That's huge. I mean, surrounding yourself with people that are completely one-sided, that have, you know, nothing to offer is going to be, that's not good. You're just going to get stuck in this place where you're never actually developing anything. You just get dogmatic in what you do, and then you end up trapped in, you know, 10 years and have to redo everything from there. That's a good one.
Lesson number 4 is to be proactive, not reactive. And this is going to be, you know, in training, in business, that, you know, one kind of big moment in my own training career was herniating 2 discs in my back in the summer of 2013. I was kicking ass in my training. You know, up to that point, I'd squat 900 pounds. I became a professional Strongman, in the first 5 months of 2013, did my first pro Strongman show, then squatted 700 for 10 in the animal cage, then did a powerlifting meet up at Supertrain, then did a Giants Live Strongman show qualifier, and then made a PR total at another powerlifting meet out in Kentucky. And then about a month later, I popped my back. And I remember in that time, it would have been, I think, that February of that year, I was in Kentucky at Derby City CrossFit Dark Side Strength with Ryan Brown. And Ryan was trying to show me, you know, these different breathing drills and stuff. And then and I'm kind of shrugging him off like, you know, this is, you know.
I breathe fine. I breathe short, shallow, fast.
Physical therapy, like, pussy bullshit. And then a couple months after that was the first time I met Quinn. It was actually the day after I made the PR total at a meet in Kentucky. He was doing a seminar out there, and I met him, and they were doing the breathing stuff again, and I was still like, you know, I'm fucking invincible. Like, I don't need to learn about this stuff. And then a month later, when I, you know, popped those discs, I'm like, getting people on the phone like, so what was that breathing stuff you guys were talking about back then? And so I had to react to this injury, where if, you know, I could rewind several months and take a little bit of time and learn, you know, put my ego aside and learn that stuff, maybe I could have prevented that injury. And that's why, you know, I always tell people that learning how to breathe and learning those drills, some of the most profound improvement in my training and my wellness and my movement, everything that I've learned, you know, really since I began powerlifting.
Yeah. That's a huge one.
And I think on the business side of things, I've dealt with this one a couple times, and it kind of goes along with this proactive, not reactive. If you know you're going to do something, you know you're going to make some change in the business, and you're just kind of waiting and biding your time to do it, 9 times out of 10 with it, I don't think there's a point in waiting. If you know you're going to do it eventually, and these are usually hard, uncomfortable decisions, just fucking do it now. Like, don't prolong it, because it's just going to hang over your head. It's going to create negative energy in your business. So get out in front of those problems and eliminate them early, rather than letting them fester and having to react to it later and you know,
yeah,
clean up whatever mess is created by it.
From a business perspective, being proactive rather than reactive is really big, because a lot of times you're making choices that you don't want to make. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're hard choices. My father once gave me really great advice. He said, the only hard choices you ever have to make in life are between two bad things. And so when you know there's a good outcome, even though it's really uncomfortable to have to say, hey, this change, that change, you're so much better off doing it as soon as possible, because then you have the most time to make the necessary steps to keep going with everything. But, I mean, in running gyms or any kind of business, you're always in a place where you have to put the business in front of a lot of other things, and that can be a challenge, right? And that can also mean, you know, you're putting the business in front of your passion, where your passion is to, you know, I'm going to coach people this way or that way, or I'm going to do this or that. Like, there's concessions that need to be made, because if you don't have a business, you can't do the thing you're doing. You know, you can't help people if your business falls apart and then you're stuck working at Starbucks or something. So I think it's really important to understand that being proactive and making those choices, whether they're uncomfortable or not, sooner rather than later, and you know, being aggressive about stepping out in front of situations.
Yeah, and then kind of my last point on this one, you know, goes to the effect of planning. There's definitely decisions that I've had to make in the last 8 years that were decisions for the short term. I was having to react to a whatever situation it was in the short term. Basically making decisions that were like, I need to pay the bills you know, this month, especially, you know, a year in, 2 years, 3 years in. I got to pay the bills this month, so I need to do this thing that's good in the short term to do that, but isn't my long-term vision for things.
Yeah.
So being able to, you know, if I could go back in time and lay out all these plans in advance and be and be proactive about my strategizing for everything, I wouldn't have hopefully wouldn't have had to make those sort of reactive short-term decisions. So
yeah,
that's lesson number four, be proactive, not reactive. Number five, and these are in no particular order, is about being valuing process orientation over goal orientation. And setting goals and that stuff is great. You know, whether that's a weight that you want to lift, you know, a time that you want to finish something in, you know, amount of traffic you want to get on your website, amount of revenue you want to generate, those goals are worth having. But just saying, all right, I'm going to get 100,000 hits on my website in 6 months, and right now I get 10,000, without focusing on the process by which you can improve things to draw, you know, to create better content, which is going to drive more traffic, and then you can drive more traffic, which is going to generate more sales for you, and generate more sales, and that's going to allow you to create better content. Without focusing on that part of the process, just the I want to get 100,000, you know, visitors is a losing proposition, and a losing proposition as well in training.
Yeah, for sure. And training is really big, because, and that's, you know, I learned this kind of the hard way. It was training literally from like day one of training. When I started weightlifting, it was like the Olympics. The Olympics, the Olympics, the Olympics. That's the goal. And you lose sight of, well, let's get better at lifting today. Like let's set up a plan so that in 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks, we've accomplished a few simple things, we've gotten better at them, and here's how we're going to do it. We're going to follow these few little steps every day, you know. We're going to set forth in a way that we can maintain training and follow along with, you know, recovering, making progress, getting better, rather than you're snatching 70 kilos right now, and the Olympic Games is 2016, so, like, figure out a map because you got to get there. You just set yourself up for failure by focusing on the end result. And like in, you know, business too, it's if you're you know, fixated on I got to make this much money, that's nothing. There's no, you're just setting yourself up to have the feeling of failure all the time.
Yeah, and the goal is just a moment. That
right.
is one moment of existence of achieving or failing. The process is never ending. So I told people, you know, for lifting, if your goal is to put 50 kilos on your squat, okay, that's all well and good. But that tends to be such a daunting task that people cannot conceptualize how to get there. But if your goal is, how can I put 2.5 kilos more on the bar, you know, for squat, bench, and deadlift? How can I put 1 kilo yeah. more on the bar for weightlifting? The smallest increment possible, and all the different areas of improvement that you could make for that, from, you know, technique, nutrition, recovery, you know, mental preparation, the design of the training plan. And you can focus on all of those, which are all part of this never-ending process of improvement in whatever it is. You know, you can find these areas for whatever goals you have. Being able to focus on small improvements in all of those is what is going to cumulatively add up to
yeah.
the goal result. So be process oriented, not goal oriented. Embrace that never ending, you know, ebb and flow of how all this stuff goes, and you're going to be much more successful in reaching the goals you have than by just putting your attention towards the end result.
Yeah, the do or die every day scenario is not, that's not how you get far.
Number six, again, this is a training one and a business life one, is know when to push and know when to pull back.
Yeah.
You know, from a training standpoint, for me, I've I don't know if I've learned this lesson yet, but I've I'm at least aware of its importance. You know, talking back to the herniated disc, I was strong, I was lifting big weights, I was winning contests, I was push. Where in those first 5 months of 2013, I said I did LA Fit Expo was my first pro strongman show. So that's like mid to late January. And then maybe 5 weeks later, I went to the Arnold, squad 700 for 10 in the animal cage. And then 4 weeks later, in late 3 or 4 weeks later in late March, went up to Super Training and did a meet there. Did you do that meet?
Yeah. Yeah, I was there.
Then in mid to late April, went out to Las Vegas, did a Giants Live qualifier that Nick Best ran. And then in mid to late May, went to Kentucky and did a USPA meet and made a total PR at that one. But what I had really gotten into at that point was I did the Fit Expo. I took 2 to 4 kind of easy recovery days. And I trained hard for 2.5 weeks. Then I tapered for a week. Then I did the big squat at the Arnold. Then I took a couple days easy. Then I trained hard for 2.5, 3 weeks. And then I tapered for a week and then did the next meet and then the next show and then the next meet and then the next show. And, you know, surprise, surprise, I fucking hurt myself at the end.
That's
like,
so odd.
Yeah, like looking back on it, of course. And I've made the same mistake with powerlifting, you know, in the last 2 years. If you watch a video I had probably 16 months ago at this time called Totally Raw and Enjoying Training, it talks about more or less the same process for me that I had a meet. I lifted well. I mean, I made my PR total 23:25. It wasn't as much as I think I could have lifted that day. But then I was like, all right, I could have done more. So let's get ready and we're going to do another meet. I had done that meet in early November. And I was like, all right, I'm going to turn around and do LA Fit Expo in January. And then I train hard for a little bit. And then it's like, oh, this hurts. And this isn't quite healthy from the meet. And then they keep getting beat up and, all right, well, I'll push back and do one a couple weeks later. And then you just get hurt or you're just lifting shitty because stuff feels bad. And then when I'm lifting shitty, I'm just like, ah, fuck this, I don't want to lift at all. It's only fun to lift when I'm lifting a lot.
No, I'm saying, yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
So then it's this time of being disillusioned and then, all right, now I got to take 3 steps back and do all this different training and enjoy it, where now, and then I did the same thing again a year later, the exact same thing, where if I would have just been like, okay, you know, that meet didn't go perfect. I mean, did make a 1,055 kilo total.
Yeah, it's
not the worst bad day. But if I would have just done that and then said, all right, I take 2 months after a meet to make sure I'm healthy, to do some fun, you know, kind of fuck around training. We could have been doing a meet every, you know, a big meet every 6 months like that, rather than this one big one a year kind of deal with all sort of up and down frustrations in between.
Yeah.
So if I would have just understood more the importance of downtime and the importance of, you know, I guess to our previous point, the process could have been better off in that regard. And I think you've definitely in the last 18 months of being here have to, I don't know if you've had any downtime, but the theoretical importance of downtime.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot to be said. Like from a training standpoint, like when you are on, it's like kind of having your fingers on the pulse of what's happening. And when you have experience as a coach, it's different because as a coach, you're watching people and there's total objectivity. So you don't have a sense of like, I mean, you want to push somebody harder. Oh, let's do another kilo or two or this or that. But keeping people back in this sort of like just a little bit before where you know it's too much. And then you have this like margin to play with as you're training and pushing people. And that knowing sort of the balance of pushing too much or pulling back, that's such a huge, it's so big to know what's right and what's wrong there as a coach or as an athlete. From a standpoint of like the work-life balance, it's like when you know all the people at the Southwest Gate by name, and you've seen them like 45 times this year, you got to decide, okay, where's the balance there? But I mean, you know, that's a really tough one because I think a lot of us that are driven, I mean, you have to be a very highly, highly motivated person to do what Chad's done or what a lot of people have done in this kind of stuff, because that's not a normal level of motivation. That's above and beyond what people are doing.
Yeah, I mean, there's arguments for sure that can be made from both sides. Like, you know, you could find what you love and let it kill you kind of deal. But
well, it's tough because as a really highly motivated person, you're trying to fight and push for it. And if that combination can work, I think if you have an understanding of the process versus goal orientation, because if you work very, very hard at the process, you achieve really, really good things at the end of that. If you are highly motivated, but you focus only on the goal, you're going to end up becoming, the example would be the lifter who goes in and doesn't have a good day and sits on the floor crying and whines about, you know, I missed that lift, right? I missed this. Like, you're going to end suicide, right? Versus, you know, if you have that motivation and you push and push and push on the process rather than the goal, you're going to end up, you know, good things happen. The steps are taken to make progress. Anybody can sit there and you know, say, oh, it's too much or it's too hard. It's tough, though, because as a person, you have to also have a balance in life. Because guess what? Like, you walk out of the gym, there's a normal world out there, and there's a lot of really awesome, fantastic things in the world that you should be doing and trying and experiencing. And, you know, you don't want to neglect that, you know, for the sake of, you know, any one endeavor, right?
Yeah. All right, lesson number 7 is having a white belt mentality. Ironically enough, is immediately after we finish this, I am going to go to a pajama wrestling class. Some others call that Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Nick Shaw of Renaissance Spiritization calls it blowjob job. But I'll literally be a white belt.
Does he do jiu-jitsu? There.
No, he just likes to make fun of Mike.
Yeah, I couldn't see him doing it.
Yeah. Now, Nick doesn't leave his house for anything.
Yeah.
He's a total hermit.
He has a gym in there now, so he's just can't have to leave.
Him and Mike,
he won't even leave the basement.
Yeah, him and Mike went to the CrossFit Games. They were probably there for tops 36 hours.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they were at weightlifting nationals, like
yeah,
Saturday
they were.
Afternoon to Saturday Sunday
afternoon,
night.
That was it.
Yeah. Maybe to Sunday morning. But, you know, so going into something with a white belt mentality, meaning, you know, going towards it, knowing that you don't know everything. And I think some of that is what has allowed me to really broaden the Juggernaut brand with people like Max, with people like Dr. Mike Isertel and Nick Shaw, with people like Dr. Quinn Hanock, that I don't try and pretend that I know everything about weightlifting and movement and obviously not nutrition, I mean, besides massing, which I'm the master. But the
massing and masturbation? Is that a lifestyle?
It definitely is. But being able to set your ego aside and learn from people around you, being able to look at situations, and I'm guilty of not doing this part of things, but not throwing the baby out with the bathwater on stuff where it's like, yeah, maybe I don't agree with almost everything that this person says. And there's a lot of people, you know, that both of us don't agree with almost everything they say, but maybe there
maybe
is.
Shorty can put a graphic, a list of names scrolling down here.
That's going to be like the fucking intro to Star Wars. But being able to take, you know, one kernel out of that stuff and just be always open to learning more and being accepting of others' ideas, at least listening to it without, you know, dismissing it. Yeah, out of hand, but
for sure. That's a huge one. I think that for me that applies a lot to, like, no matter what level you think you get to, if you always take the approach that you're never above any job, right? If you're, you know, I mean, I'm sure that Mark Zuckerberg's not going out and scrubbing the toilets at Facebook, but it wouldn't be, I mean, maybe he's the worst example, but there's a lot of business owners that are very, very successful that would not believe they're above doing those things. You know, whatever it is, it's their business, it's their training, whatever it is, you're never above being at the bottom again. And if you're always okay with that, you're going to learn so much because you have a chance to actually start over and learn again, right? I think that's a huge one. There's a lot of people that will quickly dismiss what anyone's done. You know, oh, I could start my own brand, or I could do this or that. Like, you're going to put yourself in a place where you're just dismissing every mistake and all the labor and time and energy that went into it, you know, and you believe that you've already figured out the secret, and so you don't need to do the you know, you don't need to clean the toilets, you don't need to take out the trash, you don't got to do the basic stuff because, well, I figured out how they did it, I'm just going to copy that and do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge mistake to not have that mentality.
So much of that kind of stuff, too, I think being an entrepreneur is truly being an owner of something, yeah. taking ownership of what you do, making those kind of investments and doing all that shit. Because I remember at this time 8 years ago, you know, being in this warehouse and 8 hours the first day of just fucking mopping dust off or scrubbing dust off of all the beams in it, because it had previously been like a tile warehouse that they cut tile in, and then painting the walls, installing the flooring, installing the turf, setting up the equipment, every single part of that. I mean, that was everything became so much more valuable because
you sweat for all of it. I can only imagine too, like all the times, like, I mean, like, picking up equipment, finding deals, buying stuff, moving it around, installing shit. I mean, I've been 3 or 4 different gyms, places where it's like, okay, we, you know, it's like, lay the rubber down, like, for the fifth time. Like, is another remodel, another this, another that. There's always that stuff, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And then our final lesson, and this one I've have a video, probably 3 or 4 year old video now, and article by the same title, but this one's always going to be true, and it's about having the courage to be great. And the story came from we're at a seminar in Australia, and I'm not one for the rah-rah and the motivational, but this was definitely one that hit me in those kind of feels. And it was probably weird, delirious from the travel, but, you know, This kid was talking about wanting to start his PhD program and stuff, and we're asking him, you know, what was his motivation for doing it. And it took what seemed like, you know, minutes for him to sort of meekly, you know, choke out this idea of like, you know, I want to be great at this. Like,
yeah.
And the idea to me that he wouldn't just couldn't stand up and like fucking yell it that he wanted to do this PhD program because he wanted to be great at something was so troubling. And then taking a step back and looking at how many people feel that way, that it's so much easier to not pursue the big get, the big deal, the big, you know, whatever, the big goal, because it's so much easier to go for the status quo, to not put yourself out there, to not take the chance, because with that, with the bigger the goal, the bigger the chance for failure with it is. And the bigger the goal, the more people who are going to tell you that you can't do it, that you know, that it's not a possible thing for you to do, that so many people, they never take it. They don't have the courage to try and pursue that greatness in their life, whether that's, you know, a training goal, whether that's an education goal, a business goal, a life goal, whatever it is that you are passionate about. I implore you to go for it, to take all the other things we said into account. And I think a really big one that relates here is care about what the right people think, you know, not the people who are telling you you're full of shit and you can't do it or whatever, unless the right people are actually telling you that, and maybe you find a different goal.
You're not going to play in the NBA.
Yeah, but that you chase that big goal so relentlessly and so courageously, because if you're not going after it, what the fuck else are you going to do?
Yeah, why even do it? I don't know if I could say that any better. That's pretty spot on. I'm pretty fired up right now, actually.
Pretty motivational type of guy.
That's pretty good. I think that's, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's it. There's not much more to say there.
All right. So those 8 lessons from the last 8 years, celebrating 8 years of juggernauting here in September. September 1st, 2009, open the doors.
Really?
Yeah, so.
Wow.
It's much, much different now than I would have expected 8 years ago. That's for sure.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah. Would have never thought that people were going to be like, oh, hey, do you want to come to a different country to teach me how to lift weights? Or that tens of thousands, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, millions around the world. Maybe not millions, but dozens at least.
We haven't got the numbers in from India yet, but it could be big.
But yeah, so thank you to all of you for the support for any part of the last 8 years that you've been supporting, and those who don't support, no, that's fine. You're missing out. But
you guys surround yourself with different people. They're telling you the wrong stuff.
We've got some clinics coming up. You guys can go to the events section at store.jtsstrength.com to find out about those. This weekend we will be in Buffalo, September, Philadelphia, later September, Santa Barbara, then upstate New York, and October 28th I will be in Minneapolis. Various clinics there. If those locations sounded interesting to you, along with the pointing, which some of you weren't privied to, go check that out, store.jtsstrength.com under events. If you're interested in our online coaching services for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, multiple different levels and options for each of those, visit juggernautcoaching.com. Subscribe to our YouTube. We're always proud of the content we produce here. And if you enjoy the podcast, go on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review. That really helps us with the rankings and helps more people find this information, which we are very happy to produce and very, very proud of what we do here. You can also find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and thejuglife.com. Max, where can they find you?
On Instagram, max_Ada, or on Facebook, or email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your newsfeed all day. Jug Life fans and listeners and watchers, thank you very much. We will see you next week.